Hey, welcome to The Weekend. It's time for Group Chat, the place where everyone comes together to talk all things pop culture, whether it's music.
Yeah, Beyonce has 11 nominations.
I think that's aggressive.
including album of the year.
I am happy that she is getting some play.
Mm-hmm. Movies and TV.
In comedy, like, we had memes, we had GIFs, we had people being Rickrolled, we had That's What She Said, we had, you know, like, we had all that stuff. So I think it's also just
it's
where
like
we are in
part
time.
Part of the trend, yeah.
How do you know when to move on? How do you know when something's stale?
How long do we do Chuck Norris jokes for?
Or sports moments that have everyone talking.
If you're watching a television show and somebody's wearing a Bills jersey, like, they're going to notice that and zoom in on that Bills jersey and be like, I like this show, I like these characters. Somebody who doesn't really necessarily care about the Bills, or maybe they follow a different team, they're not going to see that, they're not going to have that same connection, because their perceptual ability is just, it's a different set of references.
Group Chat brings you all the pop culture action with sharp insight, fun debates, and a whole lot of laughter.
Coming up right after this.
Hello and welcome to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, and today I'm excited to welcome Chelsea O'Donnell, founder of Angry Girl Music and singer-songwriter for Stress Dolls, also host of The Scene with Chelsea O on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, The Bridge. Josh Holzman, CEO and co-founder of 26 Productions, also a co-owner of Buffalo Ironworks, and pretty much in charge of local and nationwide festivals, just to sum it up a little bit there. And Chloe Kowalik, marketing director at Buffalo Ironworks. So we've got a lot of fun stuff to talk about today. If you haven't noticed, there is a music theme and a festival thing. So first, we're diving into the early announcement of the Coachella lineup and asking what it says about the festival landscape and maybe even the economy. Then we're breaking down why Sabrina Carpenter seems to dominate headlines no matter what she does. And after that, we'll zoom out to look at music festivals in general and where they stand in today's culture. And finally, we'll dig into the state of the physical media industry and what it means for music fans and collectors. So to get to know you all a little bit, what has been your favorite concert experience and why?
Oh, there's so many. Honestly, I'm going to go back to last summer when I got to see Hozier for the first time. I thought that show was incredible just because it was one of those where I've been a fan for a while and have watched him grow, you know, to kind of where he is now. And to just be able to then finally see him live, you know, as a headliner of a festival, I think it was out west, and he put on a show. And it wasn't one of those where you're just like, oh, his music's good and like the show is decent. It was like 10 times better live and in person. And I think that, again, I could probably list out 100 that I absolutely loved, but that one was the first that came to mind.
That's a great choice. I saw him, I saw that festival or that show came to Darien Lake last summer, and I was also blown away. And I'm a fan, but I had seen him live at Shays a while back, but this was just like the next level, like you said, watching
something special. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, it was great. How about you, Chelsea?
It's so hard.
I know.
My favorite band of all time is Jimmy Eat World. And I think it was 2016, I got to see Jim Adkins play solo. He was on this very tiny tour, and it was to a room of probably 100 people at most. And it was just so intimate, and it made it all feel very human.
Yeah.
And at one point, he even forgot the words to the song. He had to stop and just completely abandon that whole performance, and it was fun. And then afterwards, he took time to meet everybody. And so that one sticks out in my mind, because I feel like when you're a kid and you're listening to that music and you're dreaming of one day being a musician or whatever, and then to actually meet this person who you've been listening to and be doing music at the same time. And I did give him at the time my band's EP, and obviously he could have used it as a coaster or just like thrown it away that night. But I think it was kind of the mind-blowing reality of like, wow, to actually interact with this person face to face and be able to hand them my music, even if they never listened to it, was just such a cool moment.
Yeah, that seems very intimate, especially with the type of band that Jimmy Eat World, this big presentation and being able to just have that intimate experience. Chloe, how about you?
Yeah, I actually want to go for more of a recent one. So I went to the Simple Plan concert that was at Terminal B, and I was actually hired to work that show. And it was like the first time I'd worked something in that realm. I was hired as a photographer. So it was my first time in a large photo pit like that. And like everybody was just like so personable and so sweet. And I actually got to talk with the lead vocalist of one of the openers, Winona Fighter, and they were like so great. They shared my article when it was done. They shared my pictures. And I had never seen such like a good community in a space that I was so new into before.
Yeah.
So it was just, I mean, the music was great, but it was also that experience of working and professionally taking pictures for the first time. That was like really amazing to me.
with all of what you're saying that, you know, music is definitely part of the experience, but there's other things that make the experience as well and makes it memorable. And the people and the presentation and the showmanship obviously play into that. And, you know, one of the reasons we're talking about this stuff today is because Coachella was just announced, the festival, and it seems early, but I guess when you're in your world, Josh, it doesn't seem that early to me because I feel like things are getting earlier and earlier, but this year is a little bit early.
Yeah, I mean, it really feels like every festival event or concert is chasing the other one. They want to come out faster, be sooner, be the first to mind. You know, Coachella's always been that staple of this is kind of the start of the summer festival season. We're going to come out, you know, usually they do announce it later, maybe more October, November, December. This year, they obviously decide to hit it in September. And I think that a lot of that could be just with the competition, the economy, but really they just want to be like, we're here, you know, look what's coming, get excited about next summer while it's still 70, 80 degrees outside in most of the country. And let's try to capture that summer feel and get people to buy tickets now so that when April comes, we're already near sellout. We got everything we need. We're good to go. And then we just produce it.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about the weather concept because that's a big selling point is obviously the atmosphere, the weather. It's a beautiful area. So if you want to get people in the mood, you don't really want to announce that. And, you know,
yeah, don't wait until the winter. Like, yeah. Do it now. Like, we're still thinking summer. People are excited. They, you know, people tend to spend more money, especially on outdoor things in the summer. So if you're still in that season, why not try to get them to do that for the next coming season?
Interesting. And then competition, because now with the festival landscape, I mean, yes, back in the day, there was, you know, there were only a few festivals. There weren't as many festivals as I know. Chloe and Josh can attest for that in the business that you run, especially with 26 Productions. There's more choices for festivals now. It used to be pretty much Coachella, Bonnaroo, Lollapalooza, and now pretty much wherever you live is driving distance to a festival. Yeah. So does that play into the early announcement?
I mean, I think a lot of it does. You know, it's interesting looking at the landscape year to year of the festivals and how many there are and how many there aren't. There's a ton. And I think in every town that you live in or any place that you're at, you're going to be close enough within an hour or two to get to a festival. And I think that it is, the competition is just so hot right now and bands only want to do festivals in the summer or now spring. And we see September is kind of like this new festival season that we're all coming out of too. It's really something incredible to watch happen. And what's interesting is that I've started to see, especially this year, a shift where for the longest time, it was like the big festivals kind of ruled, you know, the land, the Coachellas, the Bonnaroos, the Lollapaloozas. A lot of them started small and have maybe not gotten away from their roots, but have gotten more commercial, have gotten more Live Nation, AEG, things like that, naturally as a business grows. And then these smaller independent festivals, you know, we're all just trying to get a piece of it. We're just trying to be a part of the picture and be not forgotten. And I've noticed like a big shift this year, just both working for the more corporate festivals and the independent festivals, that it seems like the corporate festivals are struggling more than they like to admit that they are. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they're having more issues and they're losing money, where now there's a shift. People want to support independent. And obviously with us at Ironworks and 26 and everything we do, we are very, very independent, forever independent. We're local. And we love seeing that, you know, mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people saw that at Borderland as well this year. So it's cool to see that shift start to take place where it's not all the corporate money that's always winning. It's also starting to be now shifting back to the more boutique independent style festivals.
Yeah. Also these festivals, Coachella starts at $699 for general admission. I mean,
that's a lot of money.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. I looked up actually in 1999 where it started, and it was $50 for a ticket.
Wow.
For the whole festival.
Yeah.
So even with inflation, like that's not even close.
I mean, that kind of goes along too with when all of like the radio festival model. Remember when that sort of popped up after like Lollapalooza and some of those and like Lilith Fair, and it was like 10 bands for $10.
Yeah.
People will still bring that up. Like, remember when that festival was, I'm like, yeah, acts are a little more expensive now and there's some more rules with things now and paying. But yeah, to your point, Chelsea, it was like a little more accessible, but now you're getting these huge artists. So like the headliners for Coachella are Sabrina Carpenter, Justin Bieber, and Karol G. And then even the, you know, the next level of artists, and I know you guys know this probably based on the artists that you book, they're not cheap. I mean, David Byrne, Interpol, you look at the headliners, but then you look at the subgroups too. And I feel like festivals at one time were a source of music discovery because you do have the smaller, the lower level on the lineup. But I mean, who's going to be able to pay $600 to go? I mean, so being a local artist, Chelsea, I know we talked a little bit about this involving Borderland. It does mean a lot for a smaller artist to be on a bill with a bigger headliner. Mm-hmm. How is that landscape for you as an artist?
Well, I think if you're given the opportunity, the first and foremost, it's to be given the opportunity, which I just feel like doesn't happen as much as perhaps a lot of local and regional artists would like.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are other factors at play when it comes to that, so I don't want to point fingers or anything, but it's just when you do get that chance, it's great because there are a ton of people there for obviously this major headlining artist who they are all familiar with, and then you are put in front of them, and the hope is that your music is in the same vein to where these people might be like, oh,
yeah,
that's something I'm interested in as well. But as far as festivals go, I think it's tough to get your foot in that door. I think Borderland is a great example. They do a nice job.
Mm-hmm.
Music as Art is obviously a local mm-hmm. festival, but they are quite inclusive and they, mm-hmm. you know, have so many local artists on the bill. But I think it would just benefit the local community a lot to have some more opportunities to open for these national acts. And I mean, even outside of festivals, when it comes to people who are coming through town, but that's the, you guys know this probably better than anybody, it's all package deals now. So it's like,
I was going to say, it's mm-hmm. almost impossible right. to get a local on when the, you know, the headliner's like, we're bringing,
I know,
yes.
support and first of three band, you know,
yep.
and,
yeah.
and there's mm-hmm. no say.
Which is a huge bummer because yeah. I just feel like that used to give bands so many more opportunities. And now that's kind of not.
Yeah, and it's not well, so in case you just joined us, you're listening to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, here with Chelsea O'Donnell, Josh Holzman, and Chloe Kowalik. And, you know, I think that's the thing is, you know, fans don't understand how things have changed behind the scenes and in business models. So, yes, bands have their openers and these package tours that they are bringing with them. And there sometimes there just isn't flexibility to add yeah. openers. So, Chloe, in the marketing of events and artists and festivals, now, when we were looking at the lineup, when you know, you recognize some of the lower, not headliners, I don't want to say lower level because the undercard, yes. See, look at that. You're reminding me. So what does it mean for you? How do you go about marketing these types of things on the artist level, on the venue level, on the festival level? What are some of your starting points?
Yeah, I think it's really important to not just, I mean, of course, it's important to market the headliner because that's, you know, they have the largest fan base. That's the most people that you're going to reach. But it's also important to kind of advertise like the lower, I don't know, like the undercard yeah. artists as well, because they are also important and they mm-hmm. do have their own independent fan bases as well. So somebody might be going, okay, on the first day, they might not be going to see Sabrina Carpenter, but they're going to see, I think Joyce Manor was on that first mm-hmm. one, right?
Yep.
So that's like an example of a completely different genre that has its own separate set of a fan base. So like the targeting and that audience would be totally different than the targeting that you would do for Sabrina Carpenter, if
right.
that makes sense.
So is that how these lineups are built, then, trying to tap into different audiences? Because you do see, you know, you've got the Strokes, you know, then you have like some more of the pop stuff. Are they trying to grab different audiences?
I think so. I think that there's both. There needs to be some sort of cohesive vibe.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, you can't go too far one way and too far the other way, because then it gets a little bit jumbled. But I think the idea is, you know, if you look at it from like an economical standpoint, the earlier you can get people on site, the more you're going to pull out of them. And like, that sounds like a terrible way, but Coachella is a big corporation. And so they're looking at it, and AEG and Golden Voice and everybody that's involved is looking at it being like, if we can get somebody that's on site for 8 hours versus 4 hours, and we can pull $40 an hour from that person, obviously we want them on site longer. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with the money factor. But I think that, to Chloe's point, the undercard has its own fan base. And those are new people that maybe are coming out just for that, or maybe some of the early shows that are like, you know what? Yes, Sabrina Carpenter is on the bill.
She's incredible. Some people are like, I don't really need to see her, but I do want to see A, B, and C.
Right.
You know, and so they'll spend their time there, and you never know what's going to draw somebody in to a festival. So you want to have something for everybody.
Well, and then there's the experience part of that too. Like you said, drawing people in to spend money, you know, every hour. So there's the food and beverage, there's merch. There's a lot of different factors, right? And you're involved in a lot of that activation.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking more about that too, but it's not just about the music anymore. And do you find that yourself too, Chloe, when you are helping to market some of these events? Does it have to be an experience that you're selling to people as well?
Yeah, definitely. We do a lot of like events as well at Ironwork. So sometimes it's not just concerts, but it's like we recently did an event where we had a bunch of local breweries come in. And we had a band. So it was both a walkthrough experience of the history of different like brews and different beers in Buffalo. But there was also a live band playing at the same time.
Yeah.
So in that case, it wasn't just marketing, you know, this local band that a lot of people love, but also all these different breweries. But also for people that maybe don't know either, you know, this kind of experience of having a guided music pairing with local beers experience.
Yeah. Exposing some people to maybe something that they, you know, haven't listened to or heard before. And I know, so on the bridge, when we play local music or maybe music discovery types of artists, we mix them in with other music that people know or artists that they know. And then they will be like, oh, what is this artist? And we get that kind of a lot where people will message us and say, who is that? I'm like, well, they're actually from Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So you sort of do need to give people something they know to mm-hmm. get them, like the average, music listener. And Chelsea, you do a great job on the scene of showcasing local artists. You make recommendations to put some of those artists in the playlist. And then you do Monday night where they're sprinkled in with the other music.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even as a music lover myself, and I love music discovery mm-hmm. and obviously I love the local music scene, but I totally understand that to hook somebody, you do have to have some sort of familiarity in order for them to want to continue to listen. Because if you hear song after song of things that you're totally unfamiliar with. I mean, for an hour for the specialty show, it makes a lot of sense. But like, as far as what we're doing here at the station, I think if people don't recognize that, just to reaffirm that it does make sense, you know, to just be sprinkling them in. And it's cool that people are messaging you about it.
And then, you know, and even a full festival day, you have to really look at the schedule and what you're doing for a full day. I mean, I feel like people's attention spans are getting smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are set times getting smaller when you get these insane lineups at these festivals? Like, are the set times shrinking?
I think in some capacity they are, you know, especially at a Coachella. I mean, they have a ton of stages and, you know, even more programming. So I think that a lot of the smaller bands, it can be a 20 to 30 minute set, you know, and I think I'm not a musician myself, but you know, I've been on the road with bands and festivals are great, but what can be tough is it's not your show. You're playing, you know, in somebody else's schedule. You have a very short time period. There's limited sound checks. Like, you're kind of in and out. You're lucky if you even get like a little tent backstage. Like, it can be very like rough.
Yeah.
As opposed to your own show where you can curate one to two sets. It's your crowd. You know, you have more kind of control over it. But yeah, I mean, set times, you know, right now, I think the average set time that I at least saw this summer was about 60 minutes.
Yeah.
But there was plenty that were like 30 to 45. And if you get a non-headlining band that somehow got like a 90-minute set, you're like, this is incredible. Like, what's happening here? It's very unusual.
Well, you know, I do like to hear the success stories, though, of maybe the artists that played the smaller set times or played the smaller venues and then end up a headliner of Coachella. One such person, Sabrina Carpenter, and we're going to talk about how she performed at Buffalo Ironworks back in the day. Coming up next, and don't go anywhere, you're listening to Group Chat on BTPM NPR. Thanks for checking out Group Chat, our new pop culture show on WBFO that talks about what you're talking about each week. Music, movies, food, technology, arts, culture, and more. And we want to know what's on your mind. Join the chat by dropping us an email at groupchat@wbfo.org. We welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions on what you want us to talk about. Welcome back to Group Chat. You are listening to our pop culture BTPM NPR show that we do every Friday. I'm your host, Bentley, and today I'm excited to welcome Chelsea O'Donnell, founder of Angry Girl Music and singer-songwriter for Stress Dolls, host of The Scene with Chelsea O on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, The Bridge, and Josh Holzman, CEO, co-founder of 26 Productions, who handles a ton of festivals all across the country, and owner of Buffalo Ironworks. And I'm also excited to welcome Chloe Kowalik, who is the marketing director at Buffalo Ironworks and 26 Productions. So what has started this conversation was the Coachella lineup being announced pretty early this year. And, you know, for reasons of competition, and we were talking about economy, and Sabrina Carpenter is one of the headliners. And I feel like she's just everywhere right now. She's going to be hosting Saturday Night Live. She's just one of the big ones who actually had mentioned in previous years that she would be headlining at Coachella someday because she was on like lower in the lineup before. But Josh, when the Coachella lineup was announced, you posted photos of Sabrina playing at Buffalo Ironworks.
Sure did. Yeah. That is that's our claim to fame right there.
Flex.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, we don't get much of that, you know, it's every now and then. But yes, for all those listeners out there, Sabrina Carpenter played at Buffalo Ironworks. It was fall of 2017. Honestly, she probably was like 15, maybe 16. I remember it like it was yesterday. You know, she was in a tour bus then. But you know, it was one of her like first kind of venue tours, getting out there as like a musician and doing her thing. And, her mom and dad were both on tour with her. She had a tour manager, you know, a full crew and the whole thing. And I think like one private security, you know, and we did all the usual stuff. She's not the only celebrity that we've had. For all you 24 fans, we've also had Kiefer Sutherland play,
yes.
Which was so fun. And Billy Bob Thornton, to throw another one in there. Yeah. But Sabrina is definitely on a different level. And it's amazing just to look back and like, thank God I have that picture, because like, I think we have some, you know, memorabilia from it, but really not much. And it was also more in our, or at least my earlier days, you know, with Ironworks as well. And, yeah, what a cool experience.
So, Chloe, I know you mentioned too that, so she was part of that was more in her Disney era.
Yes.
Now, but she did meet and greets, and was that part of the tour? And like, so it was a very intimate experience at Ironworks.
Yeah, definitely. Because Ironworks is about a 500 cap space. There definitely was not 500 people in there. So I think it was more intimate, you know. You know, a lot of her fan base at that time was young girls watching Disney Channel. And like, it was more intimate because she was able to meet with the young girls, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was I remember she added the meet and greet package. There was probably like 30 people for the meet and greet, and maybe, I think we sold like 250, maybe 300 tickets. So we were about half full, maybe a little bit more for the show. But yeah, I remember having like at one point, obviously I always give the artist space, but I truly didn't really know much about her. I was just like, oh, we got some Disney star coming. This is cool. So I was just like talking with her and things like that, but also kind of see the path that she was on. And, you know, I remember just joking around with her. I was like, next time you're in Buffalo, you're going to be playing across the street, which those who don't know, is KeyBank Center, you know, and that actually is what happened, which is wild. Like, that actually happened. The next time she came in, she wasn't the headliner, but she was on a package that played at the arena. But yeah, what a fun day that was.
Well, and, you know, I do feel like Ironworks is a source of music discovery. You, I think that's a pride point for you, that you bring in artists that, you know, maybe people don't know, but you appreciate, and, you know, you give them a chance. So does it feel good to see? Now, maybe you didn't get the show the next time she was in town, but does it feel good when they're playing another larger venue?
Absolutely. I mean, that one felt like a win. A lot of them feel like wins. You know, we, good or bad, we will take swings on a lot of different artists. Like, yeah. We always want to give people a chance. We always want to help discovery. We love kind of feeling like we know we're a part of the ecosystem here in Buffalo and Western New York and even the state and beyond. We're not the biggest venue, we're not the smallest, but we know we're going to get artists somewhere in their path. And we love kind of being that incubator where we get these artists, maybe they play a couple times, they start building a following in the market, and then, you know, they grow from there. Sabrina is probably once in a lifetime type situation. I mean, yeah. She's literally on Taylor Swift level right now.
Yeah.
All the Swifties don't kill me for saying that, but I think we can say she's almost there.
Mutual support,
yeah.
Right?
But
she's guesting on the album.
Yes. Yeah. They're yeah, tight. They're cool.
Yes, they're cool with each other. Yeah. Well, so going back to the meet and greet, so what do you think her meet and greets cost now? Because Chelsea brought up the cost of Coachella, but like, the VIP passes start at $1,200, and that's not a meet and greet. I think people think like VIP gets you like backstage. No, it typically does not.
It's a separate area.
Yeah. Right. Know? Nobody gets to go back there. Also, it's not fun back there. I don't know why people think it's like a fun area because it's just people like you have to get out of the way all the time.
Yeah.
So you're not like hanging out. It's not like music videos back in the day where everybody's like partying. It's like literally like people shoving tour cases around, like, you know. So that part is interesting as well with Sabrina and her like rising status. What are some of the things that you think have led to this rise? Because she's not the Disney kid anymore. You know, there's and obviously that was a draw for her at the time. And there was a lot of marketing around that and a big force behind that. But now she's completely a different person. What did you see in her that made you think she was going to be something?
I mean, I think what I first noticed was definitely the attention on socials. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember announcing that show and just seeing like a lot of traction, and a lot of what Chloe does is tracking that data and seeing that. And that was one of those things where I was just like, okay, there's a lot of attention on her right now. And then, you know, it was naturally like, okay, a 15-year-old showing up in a tour bus with private security. I'm like, okay, something's going on here.
Yeah.
And then honestly, it was the show, and I'm not a producer. I'm not a talent scout. Obviously, book a lot of bands and things like that, and I've seen a lot, but it was something about like when I saw her perform on stage, I was just like, okay, this kind of has it. Whatever that is, it has what pop is. It has like what, you know, a fan base is going to get attached to and kind of, you know, in the best way, surround her and get behind her and just send her on her way. And it's one of those things where you could kind of see it, and it was still probably a long shot to say you're going to come back and play the arena, but also she had all the aspects that you would look for like in a young pop star to kind of take it to the next level.
Yeah. Chelsea, you were nodding, and you're an artist yourself and you're up and coming, and I just see you keep growing, and I see your social media is great and you keep getting followers. And I mean,
you're very kind. I am no Sabrina Carpenter. You were saying earlier, what I'm thinking when Josh is saying all this is, you were talking about with festivals, how it's really about more than just the music. It's about the experience. And I kind of think what we see, especially in modern pop stars, is that it's always more about the music when they rise to this meteoric level. It's like they have an entire world that they are inviting you into. I mean, we were mentioning Taylor Swift. That's an obvious, but with all the Easter eggs and social media, and Sabrina having grown up with social media, like you said, she was what, 15 in 2017? I mean, I'm 34. So like, I grew up with social media, but I grew up on Facebook. And so it's been like a catch up lesson to even try. But for somebody who naturally is on TikTok and can have these viral trends and dances, and I felt like that with Manchild. Like, I don't even know if I felt like Manchild was as great as some of the stuff off Short and Sweet, but she made up that dance and people were obsessed. And then she was interacting with the people who were reposting the dance.
Yeah.
And I think that's key too, is like, even though she's this huge pop star, she is still interacting with her fan base. I think that's important. You don't want to lose that.
Yeah. Well, especially, you know, when she was doing that from the beginning, and it seems that she does care about her fans. And you know, even with her pop sensibility, she does have some mature themes that she's singing about. So it does seem that she's growing with her audience, you know, as well, which is key. Do you see that too, Chloe, as you are working with artists and you see them, you know, if you have an artist at one point, Ironworks, but then you see them doing other things, is part of that marketing following their growth and their, you know, I guess their growth as a person, because these people, they're people.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, it was so Sabrina Carpenter is like, I think she's 2 years older than I am. I'm 23. It was like that same kind of like, you know, growing up with TikTok and things like that. And that's like, video content is like one of the most impactful things that you can have when you're doing marketing, because it's like so engaging to like the audience. That's like what does better in all the algorithms. That's what people are looking for. When they're just scrolling through and looking at ads, they're going to stop on the video ads more than they're going to stop on just a generic tour poster, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of that is kind of going based off of what the artist vibe is and, you know, what kind of messages they're putting across. Like, we might market, you know, a folk artist very differently than we're going to market a pop artist. So a lot of it is kind of looking at what vibes the artist is putting out there and how we can kind of, you know, they'll have a fan base that's similar to that vibe. So how do we target their fan base with that same vibe, if that makes sense?
Yeah, you're drawing them into something they're already drawn to, but then saying, hey, but you could get this experience live.
Exactly.
And here's how you do that. Yep. So in case you're just joining us, we are talking about Coachella festival lineups. I'm Bentley and I'm joined by Chelsea O'Donnell, Josh Holzman, and Chloe Kowalik. And, you know, obviously Sabrina Carpenter, a big phenomenon right now and headlining Coachella. She is also a person and an artist. I feel like the pop artists are always in the limelight, in the spotlight. And just the fact that she earlier in her career and kind of has broken her mold, the feminism mold in music, you know, Justin Bieber also on the as a headliner. And we've just kind of been watching him and wondering what is going to happen now. You know, sort of going back to our festival conversation, there's always a rumor that one of the Coachella headliners is going to back out and say it's Justin Bieber. There's supposedly rumored backups. But what really goes into the insurance behind these festivals? And if a major headliner backs out and it's not because of weather, like they just lose their money, or does it depend on the artist?
It definitely depends on the artist, but a lot of it is going to come from the agent and, you know, how the contract's structured with the buyer. I think like when you get to like a Justin Bieber level versus like a lot of shows that we're doing, they're obviously two completely different worlds. But, you know, I think that there's always going to be deposits involved. There's always going to be, you know, contingents of, you know, Coachella, we are paying you X amount for 90 minutes. If you play less than 90 minutes, there could be a penalty. If you don't show up, there's a penalty. You know, some of those deposits non-refundable, some of the final payments can be withheld should, you know, contractual agreements not be met. I think when it comes to, you know, good or bad, I'm sure Justin Bieber has enough money for the rest of his life. So, you know, it's one of those things where if for some reason he wants to bail and he's most likely has a very good agent, you know, I'm sure that there's always an out. I think that, you know, it's a terrible move, but also Coachella knows how to work this as well. And Golden Voice is well versed in all this too. Yeah. So there's both parties are playing this weird, you know, you think back to like football and the holdouts are now the hold ins or, you know, all the contractual stuff that you deal with, but there's always a backup plan. Even with the stuff we do, there's always a plan B.
Yeah.
You always just have to have one ready. And especially at that level. And what's nice is like, I could be wrong, but Coachella seems like a pretty easy sell for a major artist, you know, especially being a headliner. So if for some reason he backs out, maybe he loses out on his pay, maybe he has to pay a penalty for whatever reason, I guess he made that call, Coachella is ready, you know, with the backup to kind of plug right in.
Yeah, I'm sure they can find,
Saturday night headliner? Sure, it shouldn't be hard.
Now, I have to ask this too, just because of the last week. So we had a pretty beautiful summer. So how does it work with weather? Even though I don't know how much Coachella has really had to deal with this. Well, I guess, on the West Coast.
I mean, they're in a desert.
Yeah, they're in a desert.
Limited that they have to worry about rain or big weather. But I think a lot of people are paying attention if everybody remembers what happened with Bonnaroo this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got about one day in and then they had flash flooding and terrible storms that they actually had to cancel the entire festival. And I think that would definitely make me announce my retirement from music if that ever happened. I'd be like, you know what? I can't handle this. It's not good for my health. But yeah, weather's an interesting thing, and we've looked into it numerous times on all of our end. There is weather insurance. It does exist. The tricky part that a lot of people don't realize is that when you're buying that insurance in typical insurance format, you have to like buy the perfect policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking like you buy a policy for 1 to 1.5 inches of rain. And if it's 2 inches, you lose out on the policy. If it's less, you know, you have to really hit the mark. And then naturally with insurance and festivals, I mean, your budget is tight enough as it is, and you're kind of like already putting up so much money that you're just like, all right, I already need the liability insurance and all the other insurance. Is weather insurance something I should do? Look at how much is it going to protect me from a hurricane or like a flash flood or something?
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's less opportunities, I think, too, for like your vendors and your artists even, because I know, and Chelsea, you're also really good about selling merch, but merch has become a really big moneymaker with artists making less money on their actual music. With streaming, merch and physical media has become such a thing. So we're going to talk more about that up next on Group Chat on BTPM NPR. Don't go away. Thank you.
Thanks for checking out Group Chat, our new pop culture show on WBFO that talks about what you're talking about each week. Music, movies, food, technology, arts, culture, and more. And we want to know what's on your mind. Join the chat by dropping us an email at groupchat@wbfo.org. We welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions on what you want us to talk about. Hello, welcome back to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, here with Chelsea O'Donnell, Josh Holzman, and Chloe Kowalik. Chelsea is founder of Angry Girl Music and singer-songwriter for Stress Dolls, also host of The Scene on BTPM The Bridge. Josh is the CEO and co-founder of 26 Productions and co-owner of Buffalo Ironworks, and Chloe is the marketing director at Buffalo Ironworks and 26 Productions. So lots of music and touring knowledge in the room. We've been talking about Coachella, the announcement of the lineup early, one of the main headliners, Sabrina Carpenter, who Josh had in her early years at Ironworks, and, you know, her Taylor Swift status. So one of the big things in 2024, it was a huge year for vinyl sales. So last year in 2024, it reached a 40-year high. 11% of music production and sharing was physical, so the rest of that was streaming. But $2 billion of that was physical media and $1.5 billion was vinyl sales. So those numbers were low. Physical media was real low. But now Taylor's putting out how many editions of her album on vinyl? Like 8? And clogging up the vinyl plants. Do we consider that a problem, that she's like causing a vinyl backup at the plants? Or are we just happy that people are buying music? Chelsea's like, well, I've been waiting. I've been waiting for my album to get pressed, and it's backed up.
Thankfully, no, but not at the moment, at least. But I do think that's tough because, I mean, she's like one of the largest artists, perhaps the biggest artist currently on the face of the planet. And obviously, to be pressing all of those different editions, it's not like she needs the money or anything. I mean, it's a special thing for fans, but to be then prohibiting the pressings of other artists, and especially smaller artists who perhaps really rely on that merch money in order to keep doing what they're doing. I love Taylor Swift's music. No one come at me, but I don't know. I think it's, like we were saying, like Josh said, a loaded question.
Well, and, you know, just thinking about it now, I mean, you're meeting deadlines for tours. So if you have an artist that's out on tour, they want to sell their merch on site. So maybe they want to sell their albums and then they're not getting them, or they're not getting their merch in time to get out on tour. Chloe, what does that look like when you have an artist, when you have an artist setting up merch? It's not just that, depending on the artist, they're just bringing in stuff and selling it. You might have to get shipments from different places. If you have international artists, what are some of the problems that can happen?
I mean, honestly, it depends, because we do have such a wide variety of artists coming into Ironworks. It's like one night it'll be like a local artist, and then the next night it's like some crazy like national, like huge touring band that comes in. So the process is very different. Like, I think for a local artist, they're just, you know, they made t-shirts like at their mom's house, and it's fantastic and beautiful and DIY. And then sometimes we'll get like a huge like management company coming in that needs to like ship us records, or they're like loading in like huge like totes worth of things off of the tour bus. So it really does just depend. So
has the business model changed with the need to sell the merch, Josh? Does that affect you at all? Or is it just more another thing that you have to do when you're planning?
I mean, I think it's like, it depends on the day when you ask me about artists and their merch. I won't say band name, but like recently we had an artist reach out and they were like, hey, we just need to send some merch to the venue ahead of time. Okay, no problem. Then it is a freight delivery and it is 2 to 3 pallets full of merch. And like, we don't have a loading dock. We're not that size. And the other thing too is that we love artists. We do whatever we can for the show, for the bands, and all of that. But we are incurring such a cost to receive these products and to have staff on hand. And then sometimes they're trying to send them a week or two before the show, and we don't have storage for that. And so now it's like, we not only become like responsible for receiving it, then getting it brought in. The other day they asked us to hire staff to do inventory on it. So it was done when they arrived. It comes to a point where then if we start saying, well, we need to cover costs and pay this, then we're the bad guy. And then, you know, it turns into something else. And, you know, it's also tricky. We know we're in Buffalo. We know our proximity to Canada. So we either tend to be the merch drop-off point or the merch receiving point. You know, bands will literally load up on merch as they hit Buffalo because they're back in the States. Or they'll be like, you know, we're going on a run and doing three shows in Canada. We're just going to leave everything here and we'll pick it up on the way back. And we're just like, okay, great, cool. We have three shows in the meantime. We have big tours coming in. It's tough because I think that I'm all about, I actually used to work in merchandising and that's where I actually got my start years ago in music. And I understand the importance of it. I love merch. I think that it's a huge component to all of it. But there's a lot of weight that comes on the venue that I think sometimes gets forgotten about. And, you know, it can really just be a deterrent. And if going back to what I said earlier, where let's say Coachella is trying to get, you know, $80 off of a person, if we look at it from an Ironwork standpoint and we're like, all right, person A is going to come, they're going to spend $80 tonight. They just spent $60 on a sweatshirt. That means they're only going to be able to spend, you know, another $20 at the bar.
Yeah.
That sounds selfish, but we're also like, we're paying the band. We're covering all the security, all the staffing, you know, everything that goes into it. And I think that all sides of it can be seen. But I laugh anytime like a band is like, oh, I'm sending a little bit of merch and then pallets show up. And we're just like, cool, that's great.
You know, it's limited income, which I think also ties into the whole ticket model and festival announcement model is, you know, if you announce a big festival, and you're the first one and somebody can go travel to one festival in the year or can only go to a few concerts, you sort of have to be the first one. What is a cost for you as an artist, an independent artist, Chelsea, when you, you know, have an album pressed or a t-shirt? Are you making a lot of money on those t-shirts or is it more to just get your stuff out there?
I'm not making much money on the merch. It's more to get the name out there. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky, you break even or maybe you make a very tiny profit. But actually just my bandmate Jordan and I are also in this project called Urge Surfer, and we're releasing an EP next week. And so we really knew that because Urge Surfer at the moment just doesn't have a large following. Mm-hmm. But we really felt compelled to have physical media. But it's like, what are we going to do? Because the minimum order number for so many of these things is like 100 copies. Yeah. And it's like, we don't want to be stuck with 100 copies of CD or vinyl, definitely, you know, just sitting at our house. And we're clearly not going to be making anything off of that. So we end up going with a small business that does custom lathe cut vinyl and makes them by hand. But we're going to lose a little bit even on that. We got 10 copies, but like, you know, we wanted to give a couple to some people who were involved in the project with us. And
yeah.
Whatever. So I'd say on a local level, you're usually just concerned about getting your name out there. And that's mm-hmm. why Chloe mentioned, like so many artists do DIY merch. It's like you go thrifting, you pick up some shirts. If you know somebody with somebody who screen prints, there's some great merch that doesn't cost you as much as printing t-shirts fresh off the press. Yeah.
That's the best merch. Mm-hmm. It's always so cool because it's like the artist, you know, put time into making it and like, it's personalized and everyone is different. And that has just always been like one of my favorite parts about like the local scene.
So do you think that physical media is more for collecting? Are people using that type of merch or physical media for music discovery? Because I feel like people buy that stuff and don't even play it. It's just on a shelf.
I think if you make it special. Well, okay. So I love CDs. I still have a CD player in my car. And that is the primary way that I listen to a lot of music to this day. So huge CD junkie. And I will go off on CDs for forever. And I actually, for a while, I agree. I felt like at shows and stuff, I was being told by people at the merch table, like, oh God, I don't have a way to listen to this. I can't. But within the last year, I've had more and more people ask about CDs and actually younger people who are like, oh, yeah, well, I have it in my car. So I'd like to think that's coming back. And also just having it be to talk about this Urge Surfer release. The other way we're doing it is burned CDs, but I actually handmade all of the CD jackets.
Awesome.
So that's kind of like a cool, I think if you make it special, mm-hmm. and I mean, even artists on a larger level do that, just ways to make it special, like special editions of, you get perhaps like a note inside of your album or a Polaroid picture or some sort of cool extra element to it that makes it a collectible plus a way to listen to the music.
I don't know that the Walkman's back, but I guarantee that's going to be back by Christmas, the CD Walkman. There's things being released right now. The disc. But I do have to say, when like vinyl became a thing again, I did like to be able to collect things, but I did find myself actually listening to full albums more when I had the vinyl, because you can't skip songs, or you can't find, you know, and you actually sit, and even if it's on in the background, you listen from like start to finish.
You do, and it goes by fast too, like the tracks and all that. And I think what's nice too is that we found in our society, like we're obviously continuing to go more digital, and you know, digital payments and cash starts disappearing, and then you know that whole NFT thing that was happening, and things that the physical good themselves were starting to disappear. And I think like as humans, we start realizing like you do like memorabilia, and you do like connecting to a memory of some sort, and whether that's through vinyl or a band T-shirt or something like that, you like showcasing that I'm a fan of this band, I love this show. I can look at this and have 20 memories from this one item. And like, you can't get that with a digital souvenir, or even all of our phones right now are probably filled with pictures because it's all digital. But there's also something special about opening up a photo book, you know, and looking through an actual album. And I think that goes the same thing with vinyls. It's just like, it's all starting to come back the way, you know, sound old, but the way it used to be.
Well, and not to cause a panic, but I know in recent weeks when certain things were being canceled on, you know, television, and then you worry about streaming services, even on TV, getting rid of like shows because somebody doesn't like them, and then they just go away. It's like, I don't own any physical DVDs of some of these shows. Like, do I need to start buying them? You know, the same with music. There's artists pulling their music off of Spotify. And then what do we have? You know, I used to reminisce about having the CD booklets. So do you find that at shows, you are selling physical media? What do you see kind of being the big draw?
Posters
are a thing.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah. I mean, band T-shirts will always be a huge component. Like, I think that's just a staple. But yeah, bands really mix it up. But the poster game is incredible, especially when bands can get into, you know, special designs either for a show or a tour.
Yeah.
It can be screen printed on canvas. You know, all our offices are filled with those posters of bands that have played, just because that's a really nice way to kind of have memorabilia that becomes art, you know, and that's nice. And but I do, I think, you know, vinyl is a big way. I know we've had bands that are still selling CDs and even cassette tapes, and
they'll sign them after the show. I've seen a bunch of artists, like recently, just a huge influx. I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe I just didn't notice it before. But a lot of artists are like, you know, like, come see us at the merch table. We'll sign your CD or we'll sign your vinyl. And I've seen that happen quite a few times recently.
Yeah, it's cool.
Super cool.
And that's a great way to get people to buy the vinyl in the
always
first place.
Always go to the merch table after
you
the
should.
Show.
Yeah. And you guys also have a big vinyl room. The cover, vinyl cover is
vinyl
your
cover,
whole
yes.
back or your artist hospitality area.
Yeah, literally the entire room. Upstairs, like the common area, both green rooms, both bathrooms downstairs. That was actually a really fun COVID project for Grace and I. Obviously, we all remember that. So the, you know, venue was completely shut down. And for those who know us, none of us really sit still well. So, you know, we kept busy, and Grace actually put a feeler out there for anybody looking to donate vinyls, both for her personal collection, which shout out to her. She probably has over 2000 plus vinyls, all categorized by genre. Also alphabetically, she has it all digital as well, but also to, you know, kind of showcase the art of what a vinyl cover really is. So instead of what most people may do is like, oh, let's paint or let's put up wallpaper. Grace was like, let's use vinyl covers. And we just covered hundreds of square feet of our place in album covers. And it's really nice to see it. We've had bands do actually interviews there, VIP meet and greets, acoustic sets, press shots, like all of that. It's a really cool backdrop to have.
For those of you listening, if you don't know Grace, Grace is Josh's partner at Ironworks and in 26 Productions, and she's amazing. She's been on group chat. We'll have her again. And to that point is, I know historically there are albums, like if you're a collector, some of the albums are more famous because of the artwork, especially in like the 60s and 70s, and there's like art exhibits around album artwork. Chelsea, you know, when you're choosing artwork for an album, because, you know, these songs mean something to you and you might have that vision, you know, where do you start with something like that?
I've actually done a lot of the album art myself, but for Queen of No, the debut album, that was done by an artist named Osia Koro, who worked for the label that I was on.
Yeah.
So we worked well together. I had my own kind of notions and ideas, and I would do a really rough sketch and send them to OC, and she would make it 10 million times better. But she actually came up with the cover of Queen of No, just herself,
yeah,
and sent it to me. And I was like, that is amazing. Yeah. For sure. And then I actually modeled the photo shoot I did later after that. So her art came first.
Yeah.
But I think you just look for something that captures the vibe of the music.
Yeah.
I feel like tonally, typically an album is pretty clear in what it's presenting. I mean, you can go in different directions, but I think you know if it's a darker, more somber mood, or if it's lighter, or whatever it is you're trying to portray to the listener. I feel mm-hmm. like is, you know, with colors and images is kind of the direction you go in.
Chloe, when you're marketing a show for an artist, does it help when you have that good imagery or the good album covers, or you're provided with that artwork to help you?
Yeah, 100%. Like I was talking about before, it's so much more engaging when people like have a cool like artwork to look at instead of just a generic press picture. Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, really captures people's attention. And then, you know, it matches the merch or the album cover. And that just really draws people in.
So, you know, we've been talking about some of our own opinions and also our, you know, Coachella and some things around these artists, you know, in a business sense. If you could plan your perfect festival, one that you would, your own festival. I mean, I feel weird saying this to Josh because he plans festivals. But, you know, business aside,
money doesn't
routing
matter.
Aside, yeah. Money doesn't matter. You know, weather insurance doesn't matter. Yeah. If you could plan your own festival, what would it look like and who would headline?
Oh, it's hard. I feel like I am grateful because I do feel like I've had the opportunity to yeah. do this, you know, in real life and mm-hmm. actually see it come together. And some of the ideas work really well and some don't. And that's okay. And you learn from those. But I think like money aside, like my music taste is kind of all over the place and it would be really weird. Like I think not too weird, but like I think Friday I would have Dr. Dre and like Eminem yeah. and Fitty and maybe that whole crew, and then Kendrick Lamar and throw that in and go that route for Friday. Saturday I think I'd want some of my favorites, which right now are headliners like Noah Kahan. I throw Hozier in there. I'm slowly starting to really like love Luke Combs, so I would throw him in there just to really mix it up and yeah. throw people off. And then I feel like Sunday would be like all my favorite jam bands that maybe like don't exist anymore or don't even like draw enough people, but like I would have my boys from Aqueous, and I'd bring in Twiddle and some bands that are crushing it right now, like Ripe and the 502s and things like that. Just a lot of horns and just like take Sunday to another level where it's just all fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, it probably wouldn't work, but like if this was just for me and some friends, that'd be a lot of fun.
Hey, listen, we're gonna manifest this. Yeah. Put this out yeah. in the universe. We'll call it Josh Palooza.
Yeah, there
Josh
you go. Fest. That works.
How about you, Chelsea?
After you that don't, pro answer,
I know.
I'm like sweating.
You can also do a 1 day festival if you want. You don't. Josh is an overachiever, so he's yeah. like, you know, I'm gonna do 3 days.
Yeah, well, so when I think about festivals in general, like I said earlier, when I look at these posters, I'm so intimidated and very overwhelmed. And so my brain goes back to like, well, what festival did you want to attend? Because I really haven't attended many. You know,
yeah.
it's like perhaps that was because I was never allowed to attend Warped Tour when I was a young person. And the 2005 Warped Tour would have been my dream lineup. It was The Academias, Fall Out Boy, My Chemical Romance, all of those bands. So I guess if I had it my way, because I know a lot of those bands are now still touring or reuniting, I would love to put back together that lineup from 2005.
Recreate that?
Yes. And be able to attend, because I was 14 at the time
yeah.
and I wasn't allowed to go and it broke my heart. So
I definitely snuck out to some things at that age, or snuck out or said I was going to some
Found
thing else.
There.
Yeah. I was going to a sleepover.
I should have
so
been
Josh,
smarter.
Get on that. Did yeah. you?
I'm working on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're working okay.
Well, I'm
right,
seeing
mentally.
Fall Out Boy this weekend
you
at
are?
Ocean's Calling in Ocean City, Maryland. They're one of the headliners with Weezer and Green Day and Noah Kahan and Vampire Weekend. And
wow.
So it's a cool vibe. Yeah.
I love
Josh.
That band.
Josh,
I'll say hi for you.
Yeah.
I won't get to meet them.
Josh
from
is
a distance.
Living this. And how about Chloe?
So here's my dream, right? I would love to do something. One of the things I was really passionate about in college was female artists and female identifying artists in music. Chelsea was actually in my project for my senior capstone, and I did an entire magazine about females in punk music.
It was awesome.
Thank you. It was my life's work. I would love to see something like that come to life in a festival and just have like, you know, local, like female artists, female identifying artists, and then kind of building that bill up to larger artists. So like maybe one day is like a Sabrina Carpenter headliner. Maybe the next day is like a country type of thing. And then maybe the final day is like a big like punk Bikini Kill type of thing.
Ooh.
I think that would be so cool.
Okay. And then,
yeah. Let's make all of these happen.
2026.
I will go to all of these. Yeah.
There
Let's
we go.
Let's go 2026. That wraps up today's episode of Group Chat for now. If you want to continue the conversation, make sure you follow us on Instagram at BTPMNPR. Also check out the video podcast on Buffalo Toronto Public Media's YouTube channel. I'd like to thank my guests, Chelsea O'Donnell, Josh Holzman, and Chloe Kowalik, and the Group Chat team, producer Haley Hellenbrook, audio engineer and editor Rich Ells, technical director Bailey Krytoff, social media associate Katie Daugherty, production intern Samantha Heppel and Justin Schwartzberg, director of audio strategy SJ Velasquez, director of content Pat Kelly, and executive producer Lynn Bader. I'm your host, Bentley. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.